4 miles apart, the two great armies passed the hours of darkness in fitful slumber and constant vigilance, impatiently waiting the dawn. At 4:30 in the morning, the bugles of the river camp sounded the reveille. The drums and fifes joined in. The infantrymen and gunners stood to arms, and the cavalry mounted up. Before sunrise, the cavalry patrols trotted forward. Because there had been no night attack, they suspected that the dervish had crept away during the hours of darkness, and that the hillside would be deserted. At the head of 3 troops of his camels, Penrod reached the crest of the slope in front of the zareba and looked down the back slope towards the city and Surgham Hill. Even in the dim light he could see that the dome of the Mahdi's tomb had been shot away by the gunboats. He searched the plain below him and saw that it was covered with dark patches and streaks. Then the light strengthened with the swiftness of the African dawn. Far from having absconded, the entire might of the Dervish army lay before him. It began to roll forward on a solid front almost 5 miles wide. Spear points shimmered above the ranks, and the Dervish cavalry galloped before and about the slowly moving masses of men. Then the war drums began to beat. The ivory ombeyas blared, and the Dervish to cheer. The uproar was almost deafening. As yet, the Dervish masses were hidden from the main Egyptian army on the river, and the gunboats anchored behind them. However, the tumult carried to them. The attack developed swiftly. The Dervish legions were well disciplined and moved with purpose and determination. The British and Egyptian cavalry dropped back before them. The Dervish front ranks, waving hundreds of huge coloured banners and beating the drums, topped the rise. Below them they saw the waiting infidel army. They did not hesitate, but fired their rifles into the air in challenge and rushed down the slope. The Sirdar let them come, waiting until they were exposed on the open hillside. The rangers were accurately known to his gunners and to the captains of the gunboats. However, it was not the British who opened the conflict. The Dervish had brought up a few ancient Krupp's field cannon, and their shells burst in front of the British zareba. Immediately the gunboats and field batteries returned fire. The sky above the advancing Dervish masses was pocked with bursting puffs of shrapnel, like cotton pods opening in the sun. The sea of waving banners toppled and fell like grass blown down by a whirlwind. Then they rose again as the men coming up behind the fallen lifted them high and charged forward. The cavalry cleared the field to give the guns full play. The Dervish came on, but their ranks thinned steadily, and they left the hillside thickly strewn with tiny, inert figures. Then the Dervish were in range of the rifles and the Maxims. The slaughter mounted. The rifles grew so hot that they had to be exchanged with those of the reserve companies in the rear. The Maxims boiled away all the water in their reservoirs and were refilled from the water bottles of their crews. The frontal attack had been planned by Osman and Abdullahi to allow their main force to hook round the flanks and crush in to the sides of the infidel line. The men being massacred by the guns on the open ground were brave, but they were not the elite of the Dervish army. This was coming up behind the ridge. Penrod had retired onto the flank and was ready to deal with the survivors of the first charge when they tried to escape, when suddenly he was confronted by thousands of fresh enemy cavalry coming at him from over the crest of the ridge at close range. He must fly with his troops and try to reach the safety of the lines before they were wiped out. They raced away, but the Dervish and their excited clamour were close upon them. One of the gunboats, playing nursemaid, had been watching this dangerous situation develop. It dropped back down the river, and just as it seemed that Penrod's troops must be overtaken by overwhelming numbers of cavalry, it opened up with the deadly Maxims. The range was short, and the result stunning. The Dervish cavalry fell in tangled masses, and their rear ranks pulled up and turned back. Penrod led his squadrons into the shelter of the zareba. Now the Sirdar could leave the zareba and begin the final assault towards the city. The Dervish were in full retreat, and the way was open. The lines of the cavalry, bayonets and guns crossed the ridge and moved down towards the shattered tomb of the Mahdi. But the Dervish were not beaten. As the British lines neared Surgham Hill and the sandy ridge, they found that Osman, Atalan and the Caliphate had concealed the flower of their army in this fold of ground. 25,000 Agajirs and desert warriors burst out from ambush and poured down on the British. The fighting was terrible. The gunboats on the river could take no part in it. The British lancers were surprised by the close proximity of Osman's lurking Agajirs and were forced to charge straight at them. Savage, undisciplined infantry could not withstand the charge of British lancers, but these were horsemen. They ran forward to press the muzzles of their rifles against the flanks of the British horses, then fired. They hamstrung others with the long blades. They dragged the riders from their saddles. The lancers suffered terrible casualties. Al-Nur killed three men. This short but bloody action was only a tiny cameo in the main battle that raged across the plain and around Surgham Hill. The British and the Egyptians fought superbly. The brigades manoeuvred with parade ground precision to meet every fresh charge. The officers directed their fire with cool expertise. The Maxims came up to exacerbate the slaughter. But the Dervish courage was inhuman. The fires of fanaticism were unquenchable. They charged and were shot down in tangled heaps, but immediately fresh hordes of Jeba-bright figures sprang up, seemingly from the ground, and ran upon the guns and bayonets and died. From the gun smoke that hung over their mangled corpses, fresh figures charged forward. And the Maxims sung the chorus. By noon it was over. Abdullahi had fled the field, leaving almost half his army dead upon it. The British and the Egyptians had lost 48 men, almost half of whom were lancers who had died in the fatal 2 minutes of that brave but senseless charge.